at Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll and the home of the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. I hope you're doing well. Calling you from sunny Seattle. Did I tell you I was going to become a doctor, but I didn't have the patience? Thank you very much.
All right. I like that one. Thanks to Duff. Makes us laugh every single Friday for over 2 years now, no matter where he is on the road and what he's doing with his record Tenderness. It's very, very cool. Go check that out now. Go listen to Duff a few weeks ago and Talk is Jericho. We had a great, great time. And we're going to have even more of a great time with another returning guest. I'm with my old brother, Dave Bautista. He's got a great new movie, very funny, coming out this week. It's called Stuber. He's going to tell us all about it. He's also telling us about Guardians of the Galaxy, what it was like filming the epic two-part Avengers movie, and his upcoming big-budget action-filled Dune. Of course, we'll hear the full story as well about Dave's WrestleMania match and his retirement from the WWE, his retirement from pro wrestling right afterwards. My buddy, Big Dave, Dave Bautista, returns to Talk is Jericho right here, right now.
Okay, so over the last few months, I've been training kind of MMA style. And the reason why is because I came to hang with Dave Bautista at his, you know, you said, come to my gym in Tampa. And I thought it was going to be like, you know, like a LA Fitness gym or something that you work out at. I didn't realize you actually had bought your own gym, basically.
Yeah. Well, we bought a building and then we built a gym. And it was because of the layout, you know, obviously I had enough room for an office and stuff. So it just actually kind of became my little sanctuary.
But it's a sanctuary that's like you have a full iron gym, let's say, downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then upstairs is like a whole like MMA training center. Yeah, with like the half cage.
Yeah,
it's just a killer place.
It's perfect. It's got like everything I love in it, man. It's like I could spend all day here.
And you do many times.
I do. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the great thing about it. We come and it's, you know, it's a place to socialize with my buds too, because I only have my close friends are here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of we train and we eat and we hang out and we train some more and we talk about training and
it's like the ultimate man cave.
it really is. But it was, you know, it's funny because it's ultimate man cave. But if you notice, when you walk through the door, the first thing you see is I put up a big sign that's like the definitions of chivalry, which goes, you know, I think, with what we stand for here. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure you can relate to this, but I mean, it is a man cave. It's definitely got a man cave vibe to it, but also we're those dudes, man. You know, I'd like to think of us as a bunch of gentlemen, you know?
I like that. It's funny too, because I was telling you that I set up a kind of a gym, and well, not kind of, I set up a gym at my house, yeah. But I went and found like a really cool kind of a Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
It's like a 5-piece painting that says compete with Arnold in the middle, right. That I got the idea because when I came here one time, you had somebody painting a big mural of Arnold, which is kind of the icon for any gym that any guy our age wants to have Arnold up on the wall of the gym.
Yeah, that's kind of like when I first started getting into lifting weights, and I mean the only reference I had, because we didn't have internet,
right?
But so the reference I had, and I think most guys my age, we had the Arnold Schwarzenegger Encyclopedia. You know, that's what we had, and that's what I looked at, and that's what Arnold was. He was just ahead of his time. He was kind of the gold standard then for bodybuilders and kind of masculinity.
It is a great point though, because then it was just the Weider mags, and whoever had a copy of Pumping Iron on their VHS, to watch it.
Right.
But that's what we knew about bodybuilding, right?
No, for sure. And that was like, that's when I became really fascinated with it. And I was always, kind of drawn to it. I looked like big muscular guys. I always thought that was like crazy looking, probably because I was a sick, gangly kid. So I always always admired like the bigger muscular guys. And that's definitely kind of when I was drawn to it, the Lee Haney days of bodybuilding, early mid 80s.
Sergio Oliveira.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
That dude's different level, those guys, man.
You know, I remember I went and actually met Lee Haney once at a Gold's Gym near my house in Winnipeg, and I bought a book that my dad gave me for Christmas, like you said, the Arnold Schwarzenegger book of bodybuilding, and had all the people in there, and I asked him to sign Lee Haney, and he was looking through, and there was Corina Everson. Remember Corey Everson? Yeah. He's Corey Everson. Corey, what a fox. Yeah. He's probably like 250, 5'6", but just he loved Corey Everson.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. You think about how even bodybuilders have changed, but what's really crazy is if you look at how female bodybuilders have changed.
Mm.
Like, they've changed. Like, male bodybuilding have changed, you know, but female bodybuilders have changed, like, drastically.
In what way? How do you mean?
Just bigger, you know, more muscular, more masculine, unfortunately.
Even more so now. Because I remember Bev Francis was, like,
super massive. But, you know, Bev was, she was never, like, the girliest woman. Mm-hmm. You know, she was always had...
Looked that way no matter what,
yeah,
right?
She was always kind of massive and blocky.
Yeah.
Very, very muscular. But nowadays, I mean, I think they've kind of geared away from it, is why they have so many different, you know, they have like the physique and figure and
bikini.
And they have so many different, what do they call, classes of
categories.
Categories. But the female bodybuilders, to me, have just gotten way too extreme.
It is interesting, like, because I remember when I was a kid, like, everyone knew. Okay, who Mr. Olympia was, and everyone knew. I mean, it was Arnold, and it was Dorian Yates, and it was all those type of guys. I don't even know who Mr. Olympia is this year now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's weird because Phil Heath.
Your puppy's getting super excited.
Yeah, well, she wants to get up here. No, she was.
There she goes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was Phil Heath for years, and then he got beaten last year by a guy named Sean Roden.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're kind of at that transition, I think. Phil just had a really off year. Wasn't at his best.
So you were a tall and gangly kid.
Yeah.
Wow.
I went and did this MTV Awards this past weekend. Zach Levi started off the show with saying that we're all the entertainers that you see before us, but we all started off as like geeky nerds, and all the geeky nerds are the ones creating all the cool shit we love.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and they showed a bunch of pictures of. They showed a picture of like The Rock, and he was had a, you know, in the fanny pack days.
Yeah, and turtleneck.
They had this old picture of me. I think I must have been like 14, 15, and I was actually breakdancing. And it was
wow.
And it was a little embarrassing, but in a good way.
Did you give them the picture?
Well, no, I approved the picture. I don't know where the hell they dug this picture up from. It was I've seen it before, but it must have been years and years ago. I don't think it was in my book, but I'm not sure where they get the picture. But we did approve it because I don't care, you know.
Well, yeah, people like seeing that sort of stuff.
I mean, that was kind of my roots. That's where I started. I was a gangly kid, but you could still see that I had big shoulders.
Yeah,
I had the structure. I was just lanky.
Well, that's obvious. Like I say, a guy like you just doesn't get the way size that you are without at least having that frame.
Yeah.
Did you break dance a lot?
Oh, that was right.
Really? Because you grew up in D.C., right?
So everybody, the kids, you know, everybody in the street did. So, I mean, that's what we did. Either dancing or fighting, you know?
So you kind of grew up like a downtown street area?
Oh, that's what we did, yeah. Mm-hmm. We'd make a few bucks, and, I mean, that's what we did for fun. We was hanging out, and, yeah, I mean, if you weren't getting in trouble, you were breakdancing.
How did you learn how to do that?
From other kids on the streets. It was just something you did. I mean, that was like you weren't cool unless you were you could do that stuff, and I wanted to be cool, you know?
Could you still do it now?
Not good.
I'm seeing a movie at some point that you're going to produce where you're going to have a big dancing scene.
Well, I actually did some really horrible dancing in the movie I have coming out in August. They wanted me to dance. It was really bad. They compare it to like this actress named Kristen Shaw. She says it's like the wedding scene from Shrek. She's like, show me dancing.
What movie is that?
It's called My Spy.
Yeah. Now, here's what we're talking about, which is so crazy. Like, we go start talking with you, and you've mentioned about five things in 30 seconds. That's interesting. Right. You mentioned the MTV Awards.
Right.
Presenting
with
your co-star and Stuber. Yeah. What's his name?
Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah. Now, what have we seen him in before?
Oh, he's been in a bunch. He got critical acclaim for a movie he did called Big Sick, which was mostly a drama, but he's really... known for his comedic acting. I mean, he's a comedian, and he's fucking brilliant. He's hysterical, but he really is. He's just a well-rounded actor. And this is an action comedy, but this dude he's just on fire right now.
What was he in that was like? I've seen him in something before that was really funny.
He's done a bunch. Well, he's in a TV show called Silicon Valley.
Right.
And you've seen him in like little parts here and there where he was just
stealing
like
one of those guys like in an Adam Sandler movie. Like, he would get like one scene
like stealing scenes, fist fight. He was in a movie called Dave and Mike Need Wedding Dates.
All those funny type of movies. I saw Fist Fight too. Exactly.
So you're slowly becoming one of the busiest working actors in Hollywood, Dave. And I want to talk to you about some of the other cool projects you've done and others that you have coming up. But I also want to talk to you about your WrestleMania match against Triple H. Before we get into all that, though, let me tell you about a brand new product that my friends at Omax Health have developed, something that's really helped me in the last few months as well. Talking about Omax Health's cryo-free roll-on, which is like instant pain relief for sore muscles. I actually brought it to Big Dave's gym when I was doing some MMA training to get ready for my Double or Nothing match against Kenny Omega and against my match against Okada with my trainer, Josh Rafferty. I kept the cryo freeze in my gym bag. I just roll it on whatever it hurts after a workout. I'm having some elbow problems recently, but I've used all the over-the-counter stuff like Icy Hot and Bengay. So you know they basically use one thing, which is menthol, to temporarily take your mind off the pain. It usually lasts about an hour or so if you're lucky. But all you athletes and even the weekend warriors out there, any of you who live with constant joint pain, back pain, muscle soreness, arthritis, you know that an hour is nothing when it comes to pain relief. And that's why you need cryo freeze. You roll it over wherever it hurts and ice out the pain with an Arctic blast. And that relief works in about 10 minutes and lasts up to 8 hours. So you can throw your cryo freeze in your gym bag, your purse, your briefcase, have it whenever and wherever you need it. And what's the secret behind this amazing all natural over the counter pain relief? Two ingredients, CBD and menthol. Once again, so try cryo freeze pain relief roll on today. Just go to omaxhealth.com, enter the promo code Jericho, get 20% off the cryo freeze. omaxhealth.com, use the promo code Jericho, you're going to save 20% off cryo freeze and anything else on the entire site. 20% off at omaxhealth.com when you use the promo code Jericho, omaxhealth.com. Promo code is Jericho. Don't let muscle soreness continue to be an excuse for not living an active lifestyle. Go to omaxhealth.com and feel relief faster, just like I have. I want you to try it. Go do it now. You were going to be a movie star no matter what, and it started with, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, right, and another story, living on the couch and all that sort of thing. But here you are, man. You are like slowly but surely becoming one of the busiest actors in Hollywood. It seems you're always working. They're all really cool, great projects.
Yeah. It's weird. Since the first Guardians, my career has just kind of taken off. But I am a working actor, but I think working probably more than a lot of working actors by choice, because I want to stay busy. I want to stay relevant. I'm also, oddly enough, at 50 years old, still building a career. And so I'm not getting any younger. So I'm like, I need good
roles.
You're
striking while the iron's
hot. Well-rounded. Yeah, if they're offering me good roles. And then I'm also making a decent living doing it.
Yeah.
And it's money that, you know, I mean, I'm not going to be doing this for much longer. You know,
But see, that's the thing though. Like you mentioned like good roles. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to get on that train in Hollywood. Yeah. Once you do, suddenly you're getting offers after offers after offers. And you're at that point now with a tremendous body of work already. And what was Guardians, 2012, 11?
I know, right? Yeah.
I mean, dude, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty happy with, you know, I definitely didn't take the easy route, but I think it's really starting to pay off the last couple of years with the choices I've made, you know, smart choices. With good roles, I was really after acting credibility, which I've gotten. I believe I'm pretty respected by my peers, which are good, solid, respected peers.
I'll say.
So I'm getting offered quality roles. I'm at a great agency, and they know what I'm after, and they're not the type of agencies that is just shoving crap down my throat. They don't.
Well, you're not the type of guy to take it.
No, and that's the thing. But I mean, a lot of agencies, they see dollar signs, they see paychecks, they're chasing paychecks. They realize that I want to do some art house stuff. I want to do some indie stuff. I want to do roles that are, you know, that are important and are relevant. And so they're okay with that, you know, and that's not like, not all agencies will do that.
When you talk about, you know, the acting credibility, what movie have you done? Do you feel where you kind of went the deepest as an actor?
You know, oddly enough, the role that I've done where I went the deepest was recently, and it hasn't aired yet. I did this show called Room 104.
Room 104.
Room 104. It's really great. The premise, it's on HBO. The premise of the show is, it's all these different stories that have happened in this hotel room. And mine is, I won't give it anything away because I don't think they'd like that. but it's really deep and dark, and it's as far as I've ever stretched myself as
just a series.
The show is a series, yes. Yeah. My episode is one off. Yeah.
That's, and when does that air?
I don't know. We'll find out. But it's they did two seasons that have aired, and HBO signed him on for a third season, and before they finished filming that, they signed him up for a fourth. So I think HBO is really happy with the series.
What's the one with Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords, the vampire?
Yeah. So that's weird how that came about. But so it was What We Do in the Shadows.
That's it, yeah.
And I was really a fan of the film, which was great, a show, mockumentary. Yeah. It was great.
Well, vampires, a mockumentary on vampires versus werewolves.
Yeah, and I also knew Taika, who was... he's the director of the TV series. I believe he directed the film as well. Mm. And I think he may have written as well. But I was a fan of his. And so the actress I was working with that I mentioned earlier, her name's Kristen Shaw, but we wrapped on this film, My Spy, in Toronto. And I was going home. And I said, when are you leaving? She said, well, I have to stay an extra week. And I said, why? She said, I'm going to do an episode of What We Do in the Shadows. And I said, get the f*** out. Are you kidding me? I said, tell Taika if he can squeeze me in, I'll do it for free. So I got home on a Thursday. My agent calls me. He said, hey, did you say that you would do What We Do in the Shadows for free? And I said, yeah, why did they call? He said, well, first of all, don't ever say that again. Like, never say that. It's not, you know, don't ever say that. Shh.
And then even, I said, even your dog doesn't like that.
He said, well, they said they, you know, you can't do it for free. I mean, side rules, you can't do it for free. Yeah, but you know.
You could do it for scale.
You could do it for scale. And I said, I'll do it for scale. I don't care. And he said, well, Taika, he's got a role for you. He's writing a role in for you. And they want you to fly back tomorrow. And I said, well, he just got home. And he said, well, man, I don't think I could do it. I can't even pack that fast. So a couple calls later, they said, you can fly up Sunday, but you can't have fangs. You're going to be a fangless vampire. So anyway, I flew in and built like a really great rapport with Taika. Because I love that dude and I'm a fan of his. And so we're going to be working together again in the future, I guarantee it. But I wanted to be, like, that's what I mean when I say acting credibility with really talented people. Like, I want to be in that circle because those guys are really talented. Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi. Like, they're really talented. They're doing really interesting stuff. And I want to be in that circle, man. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of these guys. I want to work with these guys. And I want to learn from these guys.
One of those things, I did a Kevin Smith movie called Kilroy Was Here. It was just in Sarasota. It was actually, I stayed in the hotel where we stayed for your ceremony that one time in Sarasota.
Oh, yeah.
But once I did the part, Kevin was like, every movie I ever do from now on, you're going to be in.
Right.
And I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, Jay and Silent Bob reboot, I get the call. And they're all great parts.
Right.
And like you said, that's just one guy for me out of 100 for you. But once you get in the circle of these type of guys, I mean, you know, Kevin Smith and Jermaine Clement and James Gunn, like these are guys that are constantly creating.
Right.
And they're going to know a guy that, listen, we've got this part, you know, who's perfect for it, Dave.
Yeah.
And that's how you build your career, just like in wrestling or anything like that.
It's a relationship business.
Sure it is, yeah. What was it like for you with, you mentioned James Gunn earlier, and you did the new Guardians. Is James back on the project?
Yes.
Because you were going to say, no, I'm done because of all the stuff that went down with
him. I've done interviews about this, but I said I would... I was contractually obligated to do the third film.
Mm-hmm.
I said if he wasn't, if they weren't going to use his script, because I didn't think they were going to rehire him at this point. If they weren't going to use his script, I was going to ask to be released from the project.
He'd already written the script.
He'd already written the script. And so they said that they were going to use his script. And so I was okay with it. Not okay with him being fired, obviously. And I would continue to be open about it. And I never actually got any backlash from it. I actually had great conversations with the Marvel execs, never a Disney exec, but had great conversations with Marvel execs, and they really understood. They were supportive of where I stood. But then it came back around and turned around. I actually knew they actually changed their mind and rehired him well before they announced it. And I'm not sure why they waited to announce it, but they did. I think they just wanted to give it some
probably
time.
Probably because they want to wait till all the
I think just die down a little bit. Yeah, and I think it was really... I think it was hard for them. I think, you know, they're a big corporation and they're a very conservative corporation. I think it was hard for them to go back on their decision and save face. They were going to get heavily criticized, but I don't know if they did. I think they got like more applause. You know?
It's interesting though, like in the world we live in, because when we're talking about is and not to get into the specifics, but he had put out some tweets that mm-hmm. were
yeah.
bad taste.
Yeah, yeah.
And people had found these right, tweets right. from 3-4 years
right,
ago,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Came
they were,
back
they were from like 10 years.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
To use this against him as to why right. he shouldn't be right. directing these movies. It's a little bit too sensitive for me,
they
to
were,
be honest with you.
It was ridiculous. Because yeah. for one, there was a lot of different reasons. One, the tweets were from a different era.
Yes.
When different
yes,
stuff
yes,
was
yes,
acceptable.
Yeah.
Also, the tweets, they were, at the end of the day, whether they were offensive or not, they were jokes. Mm-hmm. They were always designed mm-hmm. to be jokes. They were meant to be jokes. He wasn't encouraging or
poor
condoning.
Taste.
Yeah, maybe they're in poor taste, but, you know, I thought there were a couple of them I thought were kind of funny because I knew the context of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when things are taken out of context, and they're just put in your face and shown to be like in bad taste, especially now when everybody was like so sensitive. And that's what they were. And they were also, this was designed to be an attack
mm-hmm.
by a very conservative mm-hmm. Far right group. And that was like kind of the big picture. I mean, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney, you know, Disney empowered them. And Disney empowered really horrible people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they made that decision before they realized, you know, what exactly had happened. They just took these tweets, you know, that were taken out of context.
It's the same thing, though. You could go back and watch a Robin Williams mm-hmm. routine from yeah. the 90s and yeah. go, oh, my gosh,
yeah.
you know, Jim Carrey or any
yeah.
of these guys
yeah.
and go like, oh, these are terrible.
Yeah.
How can you say this about this? Like you said, it's a different time. And also right. jokes are jokes.
They're jokes.
Written jokes yeah. don't come across as well sometimes. Right.
Right? Well, yeah. especially when they're taken out of context,
mm-hmm.
when you only mm-hmm. see the joke and maybe the punchline, but you don't see the whole conversation. And also at this time, when James made those tweets, he had like, you know, a couple thousand followers, not
yeah,
a couple
yeah, yeah.
hundred thousand followers.
Right.
You know, I mean, Twitter even was a different place then.
Yeah.
But even things like some things, they just don't hold up. Like, I was watching Bill and Ted the other day. You
mm-hmm.
know, they're getting ready to do a third Bill and
yeah,
Ted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I guess they're replaying them. But I was watching Bill and Ted, and there's a, you know, I don't know if you remember Bill and Ted hugging each other. Then they back up, and they go, fag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
That shit will never fly now.
Yeah.
Like, people would be, there would be probably a small group of people who would be so offended.
Oh, yeah.
That would never fly.
Just that word.
And Bill and Ted.
Right.
You know?
Right, right, right. It's funny when you say that, because that movie does stand up, but
yeah.
there is a couple things
yeah.
in there. Same thing as with Netflix.
Yeah.
People were petitioning Netflix
yeah.
to take down Friends because
right.
they're fat shaming because Monica used to be fat and Ross was a
That's
nerd.
So crazy.
It's like, it's a little too sensitive.
A little too. You know what? So before I did Stuber, my director asked me to go back and take a look at 48 Hours
because oh, wow.
he liked the surliness
the dynamic,
of Nick Nolte's
okay.
character. He liked the surliness. He was grouchy and surly. He liked that he was always putting down Eddie Murphy's character. So I went back and watched it. And his character was so racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he had so many racist jokes. I was like, no wonder this doesn't play on TV
mm.
anymore. Like, I never remembered it like that. But different era, they were, you know, things like that. And they were all meant to be jokes, but they were like super racist
but,
jokes.
But Eddie played up to that too, though.
And
that
Eddie,
was part of his routine with those
it. Like,
type of jokes.
It was a back
yeah.
and forth. It was just a back and forth. But I mean, I understand why that you never see that movie on TV anymore, because it's a little like
the movie we watched the other day that you can't find anywhere uh-huh. is Revenge of the Nerds.
Really?
You can't find it. We had to find it on a BitTorrent.
Just because they make fun of like every stereotype there is.
Black guys, gay guys,
yeah.
nerds, ugly girls, fat girls.
Right.
There's a pretty saying it like remember when he has sex with the fraternity, the hot chick from the fraternity, he's wearing the Darth Vader mask.
Yes.
And she thinks he's her boyfriend.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically just
rape.
Pure and honest rape, right? In context of the movie, it's
right.
I'm not gonna change. It's funny.
I was,
but you cannot show that in this day and age.
I was watching
right?
a Clint Eastwood movie. I watch it all the time. They still air it all the time, but I think it might be High Plains Drifter, but like in the first 5 minutes of the film, he rapes this woman. And
right?
he's like the
hero,
of the movie.
Yeah, he's the hero.
It's like, well, yeah, it's just different
yeah,
times,
man. Like you said, it's different times.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about James Gunn and Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah.
what I was getting at is it's cool to know that you're still involved, because I went and saw Avengers with my daughter. She wanted to see it.
Right.
Biggest movie in the world ever. And... Yeah. I love it because there's Big Dave, and you had a couple scenes, but the one scene you had a line that tore the house down. Like even
Endgame or Infinity War?
Endgame.
Endgame, yeah, yeah.
Even in the one scene, that was basically, you had a couple scenes. But
yeah. I didn't even know I was going to be in that movie. I was
You didn't film for it?
No, I did, but we filmed everything out of context. So I didn't know what was left. I didn't know what was going to, I didn't know if Disney was pissed at me, if they were going to cut me out of the movie.
Right.
So I didn't know. I was actually shocked when I saw myself pop up. And I was just completely disconnected from that film for a lot of different reasons.
But the point being, though, is the scene that you had, whether, I don't know the story about it, but watching it as a fan, it's like, man, you killed it. You had one scene, and the one line or two lines was hilarious. Yeah. Even a movie that big, you still made your mark in it, which I thought was great.
Yeah, I wish we had we shot some stuff that never made it into either film. And I think that's because they were just all over with the film. But we actually spent like 3 days shooting this one scene that actually never made it into the film. But
which happens,
point
being, like you said, you could have just been
an opportunity,
y'all.
Yeah.
So speaking of the Avengers, I want to hit on Guardians of the Galaxy 3. What's going on with that? Is it happening? But before we do, I know you know what it's like to live out of a suitcase, Dave, and what it means to pack and travel lightly and with quality products. And that's why Quip toothbrushes are perfect for on the go. The compact and wireless design that tucks easily into the corner of your carry-on or even your back pocket if you're just spending a day somewhere. And you guys know by now that I have a blue Quip toothbrush. Goes everywhere I go. Stick it on the shower when I'm in the shower. It's going to incarceration with me next Friday with Fozzie, and it's definitely going to be on Fozzie's Unleashed in the West tour this September. I got to have my teeth looking their whitest and brightest when I hit the stage each night. Bing! The Quip electric toothbrush is awesome. It's got a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to tell you it's time to switch sides and helps you clean your whole mouth evenly. It's got this cool cover that works as a stand and as a protective cover so you can travel easily with your Quip. It also sticks to mirrors so you don't lose it on the go or stick it to the shower wall like me for easy access and a reminder to grab it when you pack. The Quip runs for about 3 months on a single charge, which means no bulky charger to lug around with you or to clutter up your bathroom counter at home. Now, and the best part, new brush heads automatically delivered every 3 months to your front door for just $5. And that's why I love Quip, why my family loves Quip, and why over 1 million happy, healthy other mouths do as well. And that's why I take my Quip everywhere with me, including the AEW's Fight for the Fallen next Saturday in Jacksonville, Florida. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/Jericho now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's getquip.com/Jericho. Order today, getquip.com/Jericho, and have them pearly whites looking shiny.
When do you guys film the next installment
of
Guardians? Is there another one in the pipeline?
Yeah, I'll tell you later.
Secret? Point being, you'll get a chance to hopefully maybe play this great character.
Yeah, no, I'm signed on for the third one. I'm happy to be signed on for the third one. And I can say without a doubt they're going to make the third one.
I mean, dude, these are billions and billions of dollars being made on this. Do you ever think about that sometimes?
Yeah, it's like none of that money's going in my pocket.
Just like working for Vince still.
No, I actually saw Anthony Russo at MTV Awards. And we had they're really fans of mine. They're really supportive. The Russo brothers are really supportive of me.
No, Anthony Russo is.
He's one of the directors. So the directors of Endgame and Infinity Wars were the
Russo brothers. Okay, yes, gotcha.
Joe and Anthony Russo.
Gotcha.
And I saw him and I said, "Congratulations, man. How rich are you now?" And he just had a laugh. Like they're butt ass loaded now. Dudes are killing it. So they've bought like most of downtown LA now. They're just good for them because they're great guys, man. Great guys to work with. They're super talented, so they really deserve it.
But see, once again, you're talking about you playing kind of a supporting member, but then now with Stuber coming out, it's pretty much on you and your shoulders.
That's the scary part is because it's my first studio lead, which is a huge deal for me, and I'm. It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. Like I'm really proud of the movie, but the thing is like small movies like this are hit and miss because people just don't turn out to see them. They wait for the big Marvel films. Right. It costs a lot to go see a movie now. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody gauges everything on box office draw.
Opening weekend,
man. Yeah. So if we don't crush it, I mean, that's hopefully that won't destroy me as a lead. But I'm really hoping that we will crush it because...
But see, I don't think it's ever going to destroy you as a lead if you're good in it.
I hope not. But like I said, a lot of there are people in Hollywood, they don't see anything but numbers. They don't see anything but box office numbers. They don't see anything but Twitter followers. They don't see anything but social media following. That's all they look at. It's an analytics thing. That's all it is to them. They don't see talent. They don't see storyline. They don't see, you know, that's, it's numbers. They're numbers people.
This is stuff about Hollywood that you never realize when you first go there.
Yeah, and it really sucks, man, because I think you give them some, there's been even like Hotel Artemis, super proud of that film. It was a small
little film. That's with Jodie Foster, right?
Yeah, a small little film. Cost, you know, not much to make, cost nothing to make, but it just didn't, it had no budget to promote it. It didn't do well.
I think I saw it on the plane. That's how I found out it was out, because we were talking about it last time.
A lot of love. I mean, it was a great little film. Yeah. It was a small film. You know, but,
now, when you're saying small film, you're talking about $10 million budget, $20 million budget?
Yeah, that sounds funny, but those are like our budget for Stuber was, I think, right around 30.
Yeah, once again, and you're coming from a movie that's budget was $450 million, so I get what you're saying.
Considering, I mean that's pretty small. It's a modest budget.
Is this a script that was presented to you?
Yeah. Yeah, this, I'm not producing on this. This project came to me. All I knew about the project was the director and Kamel. And
who's
I got
the director?
The script. Michael Dowse. Did Goon. You've seen Goon.
Goon, yeah.
And that's what I knew about Goon. I love Goon.
Great movie.
So I read it and I just was laughing my ass off. And I just said, yes, sign me up. I want to do it. And the next step was to have that chemistry test with Kamel. And we just clicked, man. We just connected right away.
So is this script already, Kamel's already committed to it?
So no. So neither one of us were fully committed. We were definitely, I think after we did the chemistry test, we both wanted to do it. But we knew there was going to be some scheduling issues. We also knew that there needed to be a pass at the script. It needed to be, because it wasn't originally written for us. It was for other people.
Gotcha.
And so we stepped in. We knew it needed to be tailored towards us. Mm-hmm. And actually, Kamel was also hired on as a writer.
Hmm.
And he did a pass at the script. And then we just kept tweaking it as we went. And it's got better and better.
So when you do a chemistry test, you guys just sit down and bullshit, or they give you a script to go
through? We went through some selected scenes from the script, and we just kind of nailed them out, and then we tweaked them a little bit, and then with some of them we just improvised, and just see how you mess with somebody, see if they get your sense of humor, if they can bounce off you, and that's what we did, and we just had people in the room laughing.
That's great. So you know automatically that you got something.
You know automatically. You definitely know.
Yeah. So the process, like you said, you're a little bit nervous right now, and the movie comes out this week. Mm-hmm. So do you go, like, put on a set of Groucho Marx glasses and go sit in the back of the theater somewhere and watch?
No, I'll be already on a film. So we'll do the premiere on the 10th, and then the film will be released on the 12th. And then I'll hold my breath and wait to see what those numbers are.
Yeah. Or the lack of calls.
That's all we can do. That's why we're trying to really, we're really trying to get get some buzz going. You know, it's word of mouth. You know, we're asking one friend if they like the movie, tell another friend.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like it's an old recipe.
But it's funny though. I mean, I haven't seen the whole film, but from what I've seen, it's funny. Because like I said,
I think it's funny as hell.
One of the great things about Drax is your sense of humor. Yeah. You have a great sense of humor, and now you get a chance to do it as a human being, not as a green guy.
Yeah. And that's all I am. I play the grouchy, straight man.
Yeah,
I'm just dry and grouchy.
It's the tried and true chemistry of the Odd Couple. Yeah. Like you said, 48 Hours. Yeah. This is a different version of it.
That's great. Just I'm okay. I'm content with that because at the end of the day, for me, it's like a wrestling match. I don't care who's shining in the match. I just want it to be a good match.
You want it to be a good match,
And I don't care if Kamel outshines me in this film. I just want people to love this film.
Well, there's two of you, right? So, I mean, I'm assuming you're more of the straight man than he is.
Oh, I'm total straight man. There's nothing straight. Everything that comes out of his mouth is funny.
Well, he's just witty delivery. And sarcastic.
He's just great.
What's the premise of the film?
The premise of the film is this detective basically holds this Uber driver hostage to make him to help him chase around a drug dealer. The detective has just had LASIK surgery, so he's unable to drive himself. And he's found who he thinks is just the weakest, most timid driver, so he can bully him around and make him drive him around.
Is his name Stu?
Stu.
Stuber?
Stu, who drives an Uber. Stuber.
No, like I said, to me, it's always interesting for me whenever we get a chance to talk and hear about all these great projects that you're doing, because it's always stuff from the back of my mind. It's like, geez, I'd like to do that. That sounds pretty cool. Because once again, and I don't know what you can say or can't say, but tell us about some of the other projects that you have coming up.
So I also have a film coming out August 23rd, which is a pure family film. It's a PG film. It's
called
My Spy.
There's a little girl in that, right?
A little girl. Like, she is just, this little girl has stolen my heart. I'm so in love with this little girl. Her name's Chloe Coleman.
Yeah.
And I couldn't love her more if she was my own child. She's just super. She's like, she's such a little angel, and she's so smart and so talented. Like, I'm in awe of this little girl. So it's me and her, and she's kind of a misplaced child or displaced child. And she doesn't really have a father figure. And I am just, I'm a CIA agent, and I'm actually investigating the family. And I don't, I'm just cut off, shut off from the world, just very close people out. And she just, you know, she kind of teaches me how to be a human again. And I give her that kind of guidance, you know, fatherly guidance that she's been looking for as well.
Once again, I love the choices here of playing this intergalactic alien, then playing the blind cop. Now you're playing the lovable, heartwarming guy. But still also doing Dune,
yeah.
You can say that, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah.
I mean, these are huge projects, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know, it is crazy.
And it's one after another.
Yeah, that was really, you know, it's weird, man. I was filming My Spy, and there was two things about that film that made me realize that this, like, my life has turned into this dream. It's like this surreal dream.
Again.
And there was two moments. There was one, I had my mom meet me here with the studio I was working with was really great for me, and they knew I needed to be home. So they, oddly enough, I told them, and when I worked out my contract, I told them I needed to be home because my marriage was falling apart. I said, I'm going to get divorced if you guys don't let me get home. So they were good enough to actually fly me home like every other week in private.
That's cool.
And so I had my mom. I wanted her to come up and visit set. So I didn't tell her, but I had her meet me here in Tampa. And then we jumped on the private jet and flew back to Toronto.
Toronto, yeah.
And like, that was a really big deal for me because I felt like, you know, I'm taking my mom to my movie set on a private jet. Like, we were dirt poor. Like, we didn't have food when I was a little kid.
Grew up on the streets. Yeah,
I grew up on the streets, and like, my mom struggled as a single mom to just food on the table.
Hippie chick.
You know, she, yeah, you know, you met her.
Yeah.
And she's just, I mean, she's just a real decent person. Like, if she had one bean, you know, if somebody else was hungry, she would give that bean to someone else. She's just that giving. She would go hungry for someone else. So that, and also the other one was Denis Villeneuve called me in Toronto and said that he had been thinking about me because I really had to fight hard to get my spot in Blade Runner, my part in Blade Runner. Like, it was, he did not want me for that part at first.
Right, he directed Blade Runner.
I had to win him over.
How did you win him over?
Auditioning. I auditioned. He didn't see it when we first met. He's like, you're all wrong for this part. You're too young. Which killed me because I was always too old for parts. I was like, you're kidding me.
Saying you're too small for this.
I can't win in this town. And so anyway, I thought I didn't have the part, and the producers wanted me for the part. And they asked me if I would do makeup tests, and I did makeup tests and sent them pictures. It was like, nah, this doesn't work. Then they came back and they said, well, if we set up a screen test for you, would you do the screen test? I said, of course, I want the goddamn part. So I did the screen test, and then he loved it, and he gave me the part. But then he called me in Toronto, and he personally called me, and he said, I've been thinking about you since Blade Runner, and I have this part and a film that I'm doing, Dune. And he said, I'm really happy to be calling you because I wasn't able to do it before, but I wanted to. And he said, so I'm calling to offer you this part. And I was like, don't even say anymore. And so for me, like, as a guy who was, you know, just kind of bet on himself and left wrestling to pursue acting, for a guy like Denis Villeneuve to be calling me personally, not saying, I want you to audition for this part, saying, if you want the part, it's yours. And this isn't a huge film like that. To me, that says something.
It's a huge budget, huge movie. It's a huge science fiction franchise. Yeah. It's never been done properly.
Yeah.
I mean, they did the movie 30 years ago with Sting and all. They just didn't have the budget for it. I mean, you're talking about giant sandworms and that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know, another huge movie for you in the list of many that you've done.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's pretty cool to know that you won him over that way.
Yeah,
you know,
for me it's pretty great.
And I was gonna say, I got a chance to take my dad to Tokyo this year. I did the Tokyo Dome, and just to fly my dad over,
I know, right?
First class. Like, first class, it's free up here. Did you know that? It's like, you know, the guy played in the NHL for 10 years, but there's no first class back then or whatever. But it's one of those, well, those type of moments is what makes it all worthwhile, you know,
for sure.
That's this cool stuff.
I want to hear the whole story behind your WrestleMania match, though, Dave, and your retirement announcement, not just from the WWE, but for pro wrestling completely. But first, I want to say thanks to our OG sponsor, Diamond Dallas Page, and his DDPY program. You guys know that I do DDPY all the time. After matches, after Fozzy gigs, after long plane flights, I got the DDPY Now app on my phone. I still got the DVDs that I use once in a while, old school that way. But now Dallas is doing something really cool, even cooler with his DDPY program. He's deciding to make every day Veterans Day at DDPY.com. All of the DDPY workouts and the DDPY app are 50% off for past and present military members. 50% off if you are or have been in the military. Go check it out now at DDPY.com. DDP's doing it for all of you guys that helped protect it, our country. Now he's going to protect you to own your life. Start today. And if you are or have served in the U.S. military, A, we thank you. And B, you're going to get 50% off at DDPY.com. That's DDPY.com. Go do it now. I want to talk a little bit about your WrestleMania match,
yeah.
The whole story behind it. And the thing that I thought was really cool is you announced the next day, like, yeah. I'm retired, I'm done.
Yeah. Well,
Thank you.
That night.
And this is not a Terry Funk retirement or hanging on.
I'm done, gone. Yeah. My in-ring career is over. I would go back, if they invited me on the show, to go back and be a personality or just to go back and say hi to the fans, cut a really bad promo, I would do it. Because, you know, I just love it. I love professional wrestling, but I will not go back. I will not disrespect myself or my career and go back and wrestle. I just won't do it. And I wanted to retire the way I did because I didn't want to make a big stink out of it. I didn't want to come on the show, and I didn't want to give, you know, some speech that some writer has written out for me. It wasn't like, you know, it was just for me. It was just a way for me to just kind of personally say, and that's why I did it over my social media, because it's, I'm speaking to my fans, because nobody else other than my fans gives a shit. So that's why I just wanted to let them know that I just enjoyed my everything. You know, I enjoyed the ride. Thank you for everything. But I'm done. I'm just so done.
Did you know it was going to be your last match before you had it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one way or another, whether it was horrible or not. That's why I was like, when it was over, I was so relieved. I was so relieved because it could have been, that match could have been disastrous. Like it could have been a horror show, but it, you know, I think it, you know, we accomplished, you know, two old guys got in there and we put it on the line and I think we gave them their money's worth and I think we both like proved a point to the fans and to ourselves that we deserved to be on that card.
But you wanted that match so bad. I mean, we talked about it for months, even years, a couple of years beforehand.
Yeah, it was the way I wanted to go out. That's why, you know, I tell people it was a storybook ending for me. It really was. I envisioned this for years. It was the way I wanted to go out. It was my storybook ending and it happened. But I had to make it happen. Like I had to scratch and claw and fight for this to happen. And it happened. It was just, I mean, it couldn't have gone better.
A couple questions. Why was that your storybook ending? Like, why did it have to be Hunter?
Well, I needed it to be Hunter because I couldn't see myself closing out my career with anybody else because he made my career. You know, he put me over, like when he was at the height of his career, put me over three times clean, never got it back, just so I could go on within the company and be a star. And that was what started everything for me, is, you know, the whole, you know, my whole career just took off from there. And it just wouldn't have happened if he hadn't done that for me. And that, I mean, that says a lot. He worked really hard. I mean, it was three clean matches where he just put me over, like, right in the middle of the ring, like, just to build me.
One of them was even a WrestleMania, correct?
Yes, headlined
WrestleMania.
Yeah,
one
that's
of
where
years.
It started, and we did it two more times and ran our full program before they sent me on to SmackDown.
Because it even basically put together the whole evolution for you and Randy, and originally Mark Jindrak, but the two of you for sure to really become stars.
Yeah, that was weird how the whole Jindrak thing came about. Then, you know, it came about when I got injured. They were talking about replacing me with Jindrak.
Really?
And it was Hunter. Again, it was Hunter who said, Dave's going to be back. Let's wait. He's going to be back. Let's just wait for him. And they just, because they didn't feel like the formula worked as well with Jindrak. And so, it is. I mean, from the evolution, that whole, I mean, my whole build, my career, they really groomed me to be something in that company. And I really owed that to Hunter, and I wanted to give it back to him because I felt like that was closure. Mm. Like, that was the closure on my career that I wanted and that I needed. You know, and so now I feel like I've had just a full career, and it feels good, like, you know, just leaving the company feeling like I gave him back what I could. You know, I could never. Now,
why was it so hard to get that match booked?
I think at first, I don't know if Vince just didn't see value in it after my last run with the WWE, or if I know last year was like a scheduling thing. I was out on Guardians, I think, at the time. It was like a year or two before that. So it was like always one thing or another, but I kept bugging Vince for it. I actually bugged him about it. I saw him. We were both having surgeries. I had a hamstring repair. This was a few years back. I had a hamstring repair, and he was down, I think, getting his knee repaired. And I talked to him about it, and he said he was going to call, and he never called. And I ended up talking to Hunter later about it, and he was a little upset. You know, because I told him, I said, this match, you know, what about this match at Mania? And he said, yeah, no, we'll really start putting some thought into it. And then I talked to Hunter about it, and he said he asked Vince about that, and he said Vince didn't remember the conversation, you know, which is fair. He may have been, on something because he just had surgery. But then there was a time before that then when they were going to do something at another pay-per-view where they had Stone Cold, Mick Foley, and Shawn Michaels come out, and they may have done something with the New Day or something. I can't remember what it was, but originally I was supposed to play the part of Mick. Mm. It was supposed to be me and not Mick. And I said, I don't think so, man. That doesn't sound like what I want. I said, and Hunter was there. I said, when are we going to start talking about me and Hunter at Mania? And again, Vince was like, no, we're thinking about it. We talk about it, and just never seemed to show any interest in it. Until the SmackDown 1000 is where it actually started. And when originally I wasn't invited back to the SmackDown 1000, and somebody asked me about it on Twitter, and I said, yeah, I wasn't invited, shocker. And so like a couple weeks before but anyway, the next day after I tweeted that, I get a call from guess who? And they invited me, and I said, yeah, I'd love to be there, but now I'm on this film, you know. And I said, if I can be there, I will. So I actually flew myself into D.C. for the day. Like, I rapped on the film,
What project were you on there?
I was on MySpy in Toronto.
MySpy, gotcha.
I flew down to D.C. and flew right back because I was filming the next day.
Once again, it's so crazy that it happens to be in D.C. where you're from.
Well, that's why I couldn't believe where they didn't invite me.
Yeah.
I was like, how the hell do you not invite me for? I was a SmackDown guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's an anniversary show in my hometown, and you don't invite me. How's that happen? So anyway, they wanted me to come back originally and do something, and I said, "No, I don't think so. What do you think about an Evolution reunion? Like all four members of Evolution?" And I got again. Let us call you back, and they called back and said, "Oh, okay. Vince, thinks it's a little odd because Evolution was never on SmackDown, which they weren't." And they said, "But yeah, he's willing to do it." I said, "Cool, because I don't care about the Evolution thing as much as I care about teasing me and Hunter." I said, that's why I'm going, because I want to see if people are still interested in me and Hunter. So they had this long promo written out for us, and I talked to Hunter. I was like, what do you think about this, man? He goes, I don't know. What do you think? I said, I think it's garbage. I said, I think, I really want to see if they're still interested in me and you. And he goes, yeah. He goes, he talks to Vince. He comes back. He goes, why don't we do this? Because, they see me all the time. I'm out there. They see Randy all the time. Rick's, he's going to say something crazy. We probably shouldn't give him a mic anyway. So, we'll say something real quick, and we'll just let you do the bulk of the talking. What are you going to say? I'm going to say this, 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 and this, and this about you. And I said, tease the moment with us. So, I love it. So Vince wanted us to do it from the stage. Another thing, I was like, Jesus Christ, Hunter, man. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, just go and tell him you want to do it from the ring. It's like, so I was like, again, sending me and to talk to Vince.
Just to walk to the ring.
Awful feeling.
Yes. You got to wait outside.
And it's like a big decision. It's like, Vince, come on, man. You can't have us do this from the stage. You want to do it from the ring? Yeah, I want to do it from the ring. We'll do it from the ring. So we got in there, and it worked. And so
Rick did say something crazy.
He did. I knew he was going to, but we had fun with it. And I think, Evolution, it was a good era. I mean, the Evolution era was great, and people still love the music. So there's a nostalgic connection.
But there was a great line, the finishing line there, where he said, Hunter, you put over Randy, put over Rick, and Hunter, you've done it all. You've been this, you've been that, you've done everything.
And that was it. I wanted to see how they would react to that. Because if they reacted, I knew they were still interested.
Yeah.
And if they're still interested, we have an opportunity to go to Mania and do this. And they fired up, man. They really fired up.
Oh, yeah.
And that was how the whole rivalry with me and Hunter started. They teased a me turning on him one night, and people just caught on to it. Like, that's where I'm like, oh, hey, maybe we,
no brainer, yeah.
Maybe we got something here. But anyway, so as I was leaving that night, he was like, Hunter said, he said, get in shape, motherfucker. I was going to Mania. And then like a month later, he tore his pec.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought it wasn't going to happen, but he called me like a couple of months before and he said, hey, man, I'm going to be healed up by Mania. You still want to do it? And I said, yeah, I still want to do it. Jesus Christ, man. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we started working it out. And then we actually, it's funny because we talked like a couple of weeks before I signed my deal with them. You know,
they still weren't calling you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's
like, you remember you had a couple of issues because I had the same thing like, right before that where Vince would say, I'll call you in a week, and then a week goes by, and I'm like, because like you said, Vince doesn't remember the conversation.
Right.
If he wants to call me, he will call me at 3 a.m.
Right.
There's nothing stopping. You know, he's going to call you no matter what.
Right.
So the fact that he didn't call me or wasn't calling you, that really pissed me off.
Right.
You know.
And I thought I was like, what the hell's going on here? We're getting really close to Mania.
Mm-hmm.
No call, no contract. Man. It's just.
And then I came over here. I took a picture with you and posted it. I said, watch to see what happens.
Assume that contract was in the mail the next day. Yeah,
that's the truth, though, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that's a coincidence.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it is, right? Public enemy number one.
Batista's going to AEW. Sign him now. Give him triple the money.
Oh man.
But I mean that. But once again, it was a no-brainer all across the board. But tell us about the creative experience that you had
going back.
Well, I mean, before Mania, like
it was a nightmare. Yeah, it wasn't a nightmare like the last time, but it was difficult because, for one, I thought I was going back way too soon, and because I thought if I go back, we tease us now. What the hell are we doing for the next 5 weeks? You know, because the last run I went out, I went back and they had no plan, and so they didn't know what to do with me.
2015 or something, 2014. Yeah,
and they didn't know what to do with me. So every week they're just sending me out there to cut these really horrible promos. They're just awful. And I'm just regurgitating the same crap while people are going, you know, CM Punk or Daniel Bryan.
Yes. What was they calling you? Blue Tista.
Yeah, that came later because that was my last match, which killed me too because it's like we went out there. We gave him a hell of a match. We all like put our
the
bodies
Mania
on
the match?
Line. No, that was the one. I can't remember what pay-per-view. Oh, gotcha. It was the one where I wore blue. And we like beat the shit out of each other. And all they remembered was that I wore blue. That's what they were focused on. We literally like, and there was like Evolution, like putting over these, you know, rising click, like putting over like clean, like $1 million. And we were working really hard to do it. And blue. That's all I remember.
It's
blue.
Not like you're wearing
head, wore blue.
It's not like you're wearing head to toe blue. You got blue Speedos on. That's it. Yeah. Why that of all things?
It was just weird. But I guess because you know the other guys were in black. I remember like pay per views. Everybody used to break out their different color shit. It was like a big deal. What color are you wearing for this pay per view? Magenta.
Magentista. Who would think though? That people are so ridiculous when it comes to that stuff. I hit Dean Ambrose. Long story short, I had this potted plant that I had on the highlight reel, and it's a big. It's a pot. It's a clay pot. If I hit you in the head with it, it could kill you. And I finally, Dean Ambrose gave it to me. And 3 months later, the irony, I hit him over the head with a freaking clay pot. Some stupid writer puts online that the name of the pot was Mitch. Now all people are doing is writing Mitch potted plant RIP signs, not the fact that Ambrose is almost dead in the hospital.
I'm like,
what are you guys latching on to here? We just gave you something great, and all you want to talk about is Mitch the potted plant and Blue Tista.
I just don't get it, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I don't.
So the creative was bad at that point in time.
Yeah, it was so. I thought I was going back too early. Then the night I was going back, they really wanted me back for the 70th birthday party for Flair, and I said I don't want to be a part of that. Because it just waters down our shit. Don't just stick me in there with like, you know, 20 other people who are coming back to say happy birthday, Rick. Then it's me and Hunter and we get in a little spat. I say, it's just watering down our program.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just, you know, and so then they came up with the backstage thing where I drag Rick, you know, across the floor.
Which I love. And also the ultimate his birthday party, he doesn't even get to appear in front of the audience.
And I knew, you know, it's weird because I did ask the question. I said, are there going to be some people in that ring who are going to be a little offended that they're not, you know, part of the program? They think they're showing up for one thing and they're actually showing up for another thing.
No one knew.
I don't think so. Sean, I saw Sean after. He said he didn't know.
Oh, gotcha.
And so I don't know who was privy to what. And so, but then it came to the point where I was like, this isn't my idea, you know, and I'm not going to water down my shit to make everybody else happy. You know, if they want to, you know, if they're going to do this to them, then they need to tell them that this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Not my responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, in wrestling, you look out for your program.
Yeah.
You know, what are you worried about? Your program. That's the number one issue that you're concerned about.
Especially when you're coming back after 3 years or 4 years, whatever.
So that's what I was concerned about, was my program with Hunter. And so anyway, so moving forward, I signed up to do a few shows because I was concerned that I would show up every week and they wouldn't have anything for me to do. And once I'm there, you're just there and you're mm-hmm, just, mm-hmm. So I said, I'll do this show and this show. But then they started saying, well, would you come and do an interview? And I was like, nope. Mm-hmm. Well, would you come and do a promo? Nope. So I ended up, they said, well, would you do an Instagram post? Would you post? And I was like, okay. And then they said they wanted me to come and do an interview with Michael Cole. And I said, I won't do it. Send Michael Cole here. And they ended up doing like this via satellite thing, which I didn't think was great, but it got us to the next week. I would still have preferred to go back at a later date, like just a few weeks to a
couple weeks before to keep
because I just don't think, I think we had enough history where they could have built the rivalry on packages. But I have to say that the promo that I did in DC, he called me and asked me if I would come and do a promo in DC, you know, it was like the go home week of WrestleMania. I said, not a chance in hell. I'm not going into my hometown to gather up support mm-hmm. before I go into Mania. And he said, well, you know, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come in, I want you to take off your glasses, I want to tell you, I want you to tell Hunter to kiss your ass. And I said, I'll do it. I said, it was too funny. I laughed my ass off. I said, I'm there. And I tried to play the heel part, you know, when I was there, but leaving, I just broke. It was my hometown and my emotions got the best of me. There was a couple kids or like, mm-hmm. Batista. And I kind of broke down.
They broke down like crying?
I broke down. I shed a few tears. Hmm. You know, the first time I was in that arena, I got kicked out. You know, I was looking for a job. I got asked to leave.
Really?
Yeah.
You showed up as an extra?
No, I showed up because I was told. So at the time, I think Jim Cornette was head of talent relations. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to get him on the phone and I could never get him on the phone because I was trying to get a job. Then I found out they were going to be doing a house show in D.C. And I made a couple calls. I had a couple friends make a couple calls, see if Jim Cornette was going to be there. And somebody said he was. So I just went down there. And I didn't know any better. I went backstage. Nobody stopped me. So I just walked in and I'm walking around backstage going, Jim Cornette here? Anybody know where Jim Cornette is? Trying to find out how to get into professional wrestling.
Yeah,
and
wow.
So later security came over and said, who are you here with? And I said, oh, sorry. I'm looking for Jim Cornette. And what was the short little stocky guy?
Jim Dodson.
Dodson.
With
he
the hat.
Comes like, yeah. He goes, you're going to have to leave. Yeah, you're going to have to leave. Yeah. And he kicked me out.
What a yeah. In retrospect, great story. The arena you got kicked out at is the arena you came back to for SmackDown 1000.
Yeah, 1000,
and then coincidentally is your last.
It also was
Raw before Mania.
Was the arena. I used to bounce two blocks from that arena.
Wow.
Like, I remember, I don't know if you were there, I'd go out, like every time we had a show there, they'd send me out at the end of the night and say, I used to bounce two blocks down the street. This is where I grew up.
Yeah.
And so this is like, it's the dreams come true speech.
Right, sure.
Yeah, but literally like two blocks away from that arena, I bounced for years.
Hmm. Yeah. And that was your last Raw appearance ever before Mania.
SmackDown, yeah.
Or SmackDown.
Yeah.
But that was it.
That's it. Yeah.
So tell us about the match, because I watched the match and thought it was one of the best matches on the show.
Thank you, man.
You can see you guys beating the shit out of each other, which I always love.
I mean, we thought, you know, we knew we'd have to have a few bells and whistles.
Yeah. Well, it was a no DQ or whatever.
You know, yeah.
Street fighter.
Because originally we wanted to have a Hell in a Cell.
Mm.
And Vince, because of the pay-per-view, didn't want to have the Hell in a Cell. We really wanted
because
a Hell in a Cell.
Because of WrestleMania or?
No, because of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
I gotcha.
So,
I understand.
So, no, it's not, you know, we want to keep them all the Hell in a Cells there. I was like, I think that's what makes you, it's great. You have a Hell in a Cell that's not at the Hell in a Cell. I mean, mm-hmm. they're just great matches. They're violent.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed some, you know, we needed bells and whistles. I mean, we're two older guys. We haven't wrestled in a long time. Mm-hmm. And we needed the drama. And we've already got the history. So we just needed the violence. And so anyway, we put together the match. We hadn't touched because we planned to meet up at NXT to train. And we ended up just talking. I actually took one of the guys who was up there, one of the trainees, and bumped him around a little bit and got a little ring time in. But Hunter and I never touched, and I planned to go up to New York like the following week or a couple weeks later, because his schedule is crazy. That dude's all over the place. Yeah. But and then I called him. I said, "You still want me to come up?" He goes, "Yeah, I was thinking about it." He said, "You know, you're going to come up." And he said, "Here's the thing. I'm going to get in the ring, and we're gonna roll around. We're gonna wrestle, and I'm gonna feel good. I'll feel more confident going into Mania." So the other side of that is we're gonna roll around. I'm gonna re-tear my pec, and we're gonna be screwed. He said, "So why don't we play it safe? So we know each other. We've been in the ring enough. We can just we'll plan it out. We'll talk about it. We'll go to Mania. We'll do it there." And that's what we did. So the first time we got in the ring is when we first time we wrestled. And so I say that is the match. It could have been better, but it could have been a lot worse. Like it could have been horrible. It could have been disastrous. And I'm really proud of what we were able to accomplish because it was a great story.
It's a great story, and it's something that I've done a lot over the last few years as you get older. I was never a speed guy, nor were you, but what you lose maybe in some of that speed or I don't know if agility is the word, but the intensity and the beat down and the seriousness, it's something that's missing. And this is not like back in my day, but it is that intensity is missing, where you look at someone and go, these two guys are beating the shit out of each other.
This is the violence.
Right. I had the match with Kenny Omega a couple weeks ago in Vegas. Austin called me. And Austin's not going to call unless he's like, "Dude, goddamn, you guys beat the shit out of each other, man. I love that." That's where the beauty of it is. And that's what I liked about your guys' match. You can tell. You can see it.
I always tell, and I always say, and I know you've said this before, I think that's what guys from our era and eras before, they just got over more.
Yeah.
Because we went through that. We beat the hell out of each other for their entertainment. You know, and I think that builds a certain amount of respect from people. But it is. I always say that professional wrestling is a theater of violence. And that's what it is to me. But that's what it is. It's like you don't have to do all these huge, fancy spots. If you want, just break it down every once in a while. And like Eddie was so good at that. Just breaking it down and just being violent, being tenacious and being violent and aggressive.
He used to call it, him and Chris, used to call it meat and potato. Meat and potatoes, just meat and potato, man.
And that's what wrestling is to me. I think you're right. I mean, it's really being lost. And I don't think that's...
Especially with two guys of your size, big guys should work like big guys. Yeah, I've always thought absolutely. That. That's, I was watching the day, nothing against these guys. Yeah. I understand where they're doing it by C. Lashley and Strowman doing leapfrogs and lucha rolls. And it's like, I understand it, but there's no way I would ever approve that from those guys.
That's a novelty thing. That's an ego thing. It's like just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right.
That was actually something I picked up early on from Afa. Afa always said, "Wrestle how you look. Wrestle how you look." He always said that. "Wrestle how you look. Big man wrestle, big style. You know, big strong style." So I kind of carried that. You know, and every once in a while, like in house shows, we would goof around and do like international spots. We did, especially me and Randy. You know, because back then I was pretty athletic for my size.
But not doing it on TV.
Not doing it on TV, not a chance.
Talk about the one of the more creative spots was the nose ring spot.
Yeah.
And may I just say, as soon as I saw you walk out with a nose ring, I'm like, oh, he's going to get ripped. I thought he was just going to rip it off.
That was a hunter because I didn't, I would never wear this into the ring. Never.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to wear it. And Hunter, he knew because he goes, "You're going to wear the nose ring in the match?" And I was like, "No." He goes, "Well, you know, I kind of had the spot. I'm going to rip it out." I said, "Hell yeah, I'll wear it."
Yeah.
And so we talked about pulling out. He's great.
Well, just pulling on it and just tweaking it.
So course, uncomfortable.
Close-ups of the nose and just,
You know what's funny is what I remember, because I had not been hitting it with, on the back with a chair in years. And as soon as that first whack, and I'm laying there in the ring and he comes and he puts it over me and I look up at him, I go, "I forgot how much that hurt." Like, just the sound of it. It's just a pain.
It's a cold bucket of water that gets thrown in your face.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but then we had a good laugh and that whole spot was just so silly. And you know what I did? It was so, because we couldn't figure, we knew there had to be, if you're getting your nose ring yanked out, there had to be some blood.
Right.
So we had this whole thing planned out for how I could, because we're not obviously not going to do this, but
you weren't gonna get another $100,000 fine.
So in the tool chest, that he hit me with, we put a bunch of thumbtacks.
Mm-hmm.
So we planned out when I rolled out and did the thing, I could just drop down and sell and get a thumbtack. I'm on the floor, like thumbtacking myself in the nose. Thinking, God, this is so much fun.
This is when you need to call Uncle Jericho, man. I would have taught you the trick. What you do is you grow your pinky out and you sharpen it and you just stick it up your nose. That's old school juicing. I could have told you that in the cage match in 2009 too.
If I had known that you were going to hard weigh me, in retrospect, now I was like, Jesus, I could have saved a lot of money. That was so bad because I'm bleeding from here.
Yeah, you're bleeding the top of your head, too, the cage match. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From brass knuckles or some shit or whatever it was.
That was that pipe we used.
We had all sorts of stuff
but
up there.
But that's why I thought, that's why if somebody hits you with a pipe. Mm-hmm. You're bleeding.
No, I get it.
You're losing the title.
And it's a cage match.
So we just changed stories.
But that's what Dynamite Kid used to do is he would sharpen his pinky and just shove it up his nose.
And other people's nose.
If you needed to, yeah. How did you feel after the match?
Besides beat up, I was pretty beat up. I took a really bad bump. It was, oddly enough, the bump that looked like it hurt the least hurt the worst. And it was this bump I took on the table. I took it all kinds of wrong. So I felt a little beat up. But I felt really satisfied. Really satisfied, content, like at peace with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was happy to go out with that. And I felt, it was weird because I had such hatred coming back on my last run in 2014. But I felt like all love this time around. And even the way I closed out, because I wanted to prove a point. I wanted to beat myself up a little bit for the fans so they know that it meant something.
Mr. Hollywood movie star is not coming back.
Yeah, I'm not going to come back and say it.
Like, paycheck and
get on the mic and say stupid shit. Mm-hmm. And just have you to cheer for me and give somebody my finish and like some people.
Right.
I'm going to come back and I'm going to put it on the line. I'm going to leave here on my back.
You took some chances too.
Yeah, and I took some chances so they know that this means so that I care about them. I'm willing to sacrifice myself because I love this that much.
I text Hunter when he jumped off the steps with the sledgehammer. So that's the highest you've ever gotten in the ring ever.
You did get up high.
I said, Lucha,
it's
Lucha.
All that new training he's doing.
Jumping up on those big big steps,
And also having Rick involved in that match it was like a really kind of full circle thing for us, I really wanted him down there, and also because he just tied everything up.
Sure.
Like him coming in, just tied
it's
everything
the evolution,
up.
It's flair.
That's all storytelling.
It's the guy you beat up. Yeah. I mean, for a 5-week story, I thought it was a really well done story, like you said. Did you talk to Vince afterwards?
Not a lot. Mm-hmm. I saw him. It's weird. When I got back to Gorilla, there was nobody there. I don't know where they were all at.
It was in the middle of the show.
Yeah, I don't know where they had kind of all gone. We took the long way around, went up to Gorilla, and there was only like a few people there. But I did talk to Vince, and it wasn't anything overly emotional, but he was really happy. Mm. And all along, he was really happy that I was back.
Mm.
And he was very, very gracious. And we butted heads a little bit, but not in a malicious way. Not
in a creative
bad
way.
Very creative way. Which is, it's weird, but I've had my differences with Vince, but I've always gotten along with him. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything bad to say about the dude. He's difficult sometimes.
I feel the same way, but you got to, first of all, he's two creative guys.
Yeah.
Plus, he's your boss. Yeah. Nobody loves their boss all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to do stuff you don't want to do. Yeah. But I feel the same way. I never had any ill will towards Vince. I actually liked butting heads with him because it was about creativity.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I said that to you earlier. I think we kind of have the same relationship with Vince.
Because he knows that we're not going to kiss his ass.
We're not going to just say yes. Yeah, I do. I think he appreciates it. Mm. And sometimes I think he might disagree with you just to let you know he's the boss.
Mm.
But at the same time, I understand that about him, and I understand that he's a businessman.
And like you said, I think he appreciates the fact that we have ideas, appreciates the fact that we're creative, but also appreciates the fact that Jesse Ventura told me years ago, if you want to get over the Vince, go get a job somewhere else, let him know that you don't need him. Then he'll want you that much more and, treat you that much better.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the case.
Yeah.
So, man, that's the end. You feel pretty satisfied, happy with your career?
I'm super happy with it. I'm really happy with it, really content. I think I went out on a high note. And I think more than anything, the most important thing to me is that I went out on my terms.
Mm.
Like I held out. Mm-hmm. I held my ground and I went out the way I wanted to go out. And again, with Hunter helping me, like he supported me, and he wanted to see me off this way as well.
You know, I mean, so. I think you're one of Vince's greatest creations as a character. Yeah. You know, future Hall of Famer for sure.
Yeah, hope
you
so.
Know, what a great way to end it off. Yeah. To know, like you said, that you can walk out of there excited and happy and on your own terms, plus with all these other gigs in front of you. Last couple of questions for you. When you look back at your career, is there a match that stands out as the one that you thought was the best?
Yeah, it's weird, man, because you'll get this. Not a lot of people get this, but it was with Rey Mysterio, and it was at a house show in Mexico. And the reason why I begged and pleaded to get this match. We weren't set up to work each other, but I was leaving the company, and I was, it was 2010-ish, and I was really hot as a heel at this point. And I thought this is my last opportunity to be able to work Rey as a heel in Mexico. Like everybody wants to work.
The dream, right?
It's the dream. And I begged and pleaded for this match, and I got it. And we went and got and gave them a pay-per-view match, like to the point, you know, it only happens a few times, but when you go back and the locker room is standing up cheering, like how good does that feel?
Yeah, most of the time the boys don't want to give you that credit.
But we went and Undertaker was back there, and it was like we gave him like a pay-per-view match, like Rey kicked out of my finish and everything. Mm-hmm. We gave him every bell and whistle we could think of, and I just like the crowd was just like they were just loving it. And I felt like. Like, that's what I wanted my career to be. Like, I gave them their hero. Like, I was really proud of that match.
That's
we
cool.
gave him a pay-per-view match.
He's the best babyface to work with, too, because he's so small, so much sympathy, but then just explosive.
Yeah.
Anything that he does.
Right.
You know, always one of my
Mexico, geez.
Always one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Last question. All these projects you've done, all these roles that you've had, which role is your favorite that you've done? Is the one you can pick?
You know, oddly enough, and I think it's... the one that really, like, I'm really proud of, and it's probably, it'd be hard for me to explain why, but I think it's my role in Hotel Artemis.
Mm.
You know, it was like a different role for me. It was a real accomplishment getting to work with Jody. I had a lot of freedom in the role, so I actually got to create the role, create a lot of really magical moments, and the range of emotion with the character was great. And so I think it's at this point it's that role. I've had other moments and other roles, and I'm obviously super proud of some of my more successful roles, like the Drac stuff.
Mm-hmm. Stuber as well, obviously.
And Stuber as well. But it's for some reason that role is just really special to me.
Have you ever been nervous? Because you've worked with so many of the biggest names.
I'm always nervous. I walk on set nervous. It takes me a while to get out of my head and be comfortable and stop being self-conscious. I'm always nervous. It really takes me. I'm my own worst enemy. It takes me a while to snap out of it. It takes me a while to get heated.
Has there been someone that you've been nervous to act with though more than others?
I was terrified with Jody.
Jody, that's Oscar winner.
I was terrified for the table read. She even just started laying into me. We sat down for the table read. The table read was just me and her, and she just starts staring at me, and so I'm like reading and I'm looking at her and like being all self conscious, and somewhere she just stopped reading. She goes, "You know, you're not nearly as big as I thought you'd be." So in my head, I'm thinking, God, she's second guessing me for this role. So every word I read after that, all I can think about is, God, she doesn't want me for this role. God, I'm horrible. I know I'm going to lose the role. Then she's like, we're eating a little bit more, and she stopped and she goes, "You know, Liam Neeson's way bigger than you."
She's busting your balls.
She's busting my... And I went, and there's another actor named Sterling K. Brown, and I was talking to him, telling him, because I was mortified. I was like, man, really stressed. And he goes, "Dude, she's fucking with you." And I was like, "No, she didn't seem like it. She was fucking with you." And I just more I thought to think about it. And I said something to the director. She goes, "Oh," he goes, "Oh yeah, she was fucking with you. She keeps fucking with me." And apparently Jody was just fucking with everybody. You know, she kept saying to the director, she'd go up to the director like during scenes and he's shooting. And she goes, and she'd say stuff like, "Yeah, that was really great. But what a good director would do."
She's totally like, ripping all you guys.
Like 5 feet tall. Right. Just walking around f***ing with people.
She's like, "Yeah, I got an Oscar. What the hell do you know, right?"
She got like three.
Three Oscars, nominations at least, man.
I know she won one for The Accused.
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, too.
Maybe she won one when she was younger, too. Yeah, Taxi Driver or something, maybe. Something like that. Yeah. Well, dude, congratulations on a great wrestling career and a burgeoning great movie career as well. And thanks for letting me use your place for free.
Yeah, man, whatever.
I'll try not to steal your waters.
No, man. Thanks, man.
All right, go see Dave's new movie, Stuber, hits theaters next Friday. You're going to laugh, I promise. It's very, very funny stuff. Talk is Jericho's movie preview guru, Nikki Novak from Fandango, saw it, and she said it's very, very funny. We're actually going to talk about that next week when Nikki's here. And Dave and his co-star, Kumail Nanjiani, are great together, is what she said. That's what I've heard all across the board. And like I mentioned, Nikki's going to be on Talk is Jericho next Wednesday to give us the lowdown on all the upcoming summer and fall movies. She's going to tell you what to see and what to skip, so get ready for that. What you should not skip is Fozzie at Incarceration on July 12th with Shinedown and Seether. It's actually going to be at a prison, a haunted prison, working on hooking up a great little Talk is Jericho for that. Fozzie also playing with Nickelback August 22nd in Uncasville, Connecticut, August 24th in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and Unleashed in the West this fall. We're opening for Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. We're booked a whole tour around it, going to Colorado, Utah, Nevada, California, Arizona, Texas, and then making our way back east to Mississippi and Georgia. Go to FozzieRock.com for all ticket and gig information. And don't forget our VIP meet and greet, one of the best in the business. We'll hang out with you, play a mini concert of songs you're not going to hear later on that night. We have a laugh, just a great, great time. So come join us, FozzieRock.com. And speaking of great times, join us on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2. We are 92% sold out, sailing January 20th of next year. Fozzie's going to be there. Ric Flair, the NWO of Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and X-Pac. Jake the Snake Roger, Roberts, Booker T, Brad Williams is going to be there, Bruce Jingle, Sarah Tiana, great, great, funny people. Craig Gass just joined the cast, coming back again. Vicky Guerrero, Shaw Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, Jack Slade, Red Cup Jeff, Farewell to Fear, Kick-Ax, Rubik's Cube, Killer Queen, Dave Spivak Project, Jared James Nichols, Light the Torch, so many bands, so much stuff going on. Don't forget as well, DDP is going to be there doing live yoga workouts, and most importantly, and not last but not least, AEW is going to be there. How many top stars from that company? So you got stars from the past, present, future, great rock and roll bands, funny comedians, paranormal experiences with Beyond the Darkness and Dave Schrader. Do not miss this. It is the vacation of a lifetime. I guarantee it. We don't want you to be left on shore. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We are less than 100 cabins away from selling out. All right. You guys have a great weekend. I hope you enjoy yourselves. And on Wednesday, Nikki Novak, like I said, is going to be back. The late summer fall movie preview. What should you see? What should you skip? She's got some great stories, some Academy Award predictions. And together, as always, we've got some great new movie ideas. Beware of Monster Wives. I like that. Listen next Wednesday as Nikki shares the 411 on Spider-Man Far From Home, The Lion King, Tarantino's ninth film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm excited with that. Big Dave Stuber, of course. Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. The Rock's new film, Hobbs and Shaw. Rambo, Last Blood. Schwarzenegger returns as the Terminator in Dark Fate. Lots of great stuff happening. We keep the entertainment rolling for you. You're going to get more of that next week right here on Talk is Jericho. In the meantime and in between time, have a great weekend. You know we love to love you, baby. Stay hard, stay wet, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big, yeah, boy, happy July 4th. Happy Canada Day. And happy everything, man. Just happy life. Oh, yeah.